Hi, I'm Jamie Rickard.
And I'm Tracy Sullivan, and we're the career coaches of Fisher.
Okay, so Tracy, today we're going to be talking about interviewing, which is a super stressful situation, I think, for anyone, whether you're a student or an adult.
It's absolutely
just one of those things. So we thought we'd spend today talking about, you know, whether it's for graduate school, internships, full-time, part-time jobs, that we'd go over some prep tips, common fails, and just overall best practices.
Love it.
Yes. So I think what we wanted to kick off with was some prep tips, because I do think that at least if you can get ahead of those things, you're set up for more success, even if you feel like, oh boy, I'm so nervous. The prep can really be key.
Preparation is key. I look back to myself and I always thought, like, when an interview was coming up, I thought, oh, I can talk to people. It's not going to be a big deal. And then I remember, like, going in and completely bombing out. I was totally unprepared, totally unexpected. Anybody that's listening that has been in one of the classes that I do one of my presentations in, I say mock interviews are probably the least requested service.
They are.
They should be a top service. I can tell you in 5 minutes what you need to work on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would rather have you have a bad interview with me than with a job you actually want.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So with that, I'm just going to promote mock interviews.
Yes.
Because that's the best way to prepare. Is it uncomfortable? Yeah, but it's just us. We're not scary.
I was going to say, mock interviews are probably more awkward than the actual interview because you know that we're going to give you feedback at the end. But like you said, when you have the space to go over these sample questions and you communicate your response, at least you know you're going to hear, this is how you tweak that, or this is how you make it better, so that you don't walk into the actual real deal and risk losing it just because you were a little uncomfy having a mock interview.
And so the other thing that this actually stresses me out is when students schedule a mock interview and then they say, well, I have an interview tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Because
really soon.
A day is not enough time to actually work on the things that you need to work on. And interviews seem okay. Like, I'll be fine, not a big deal. And then people usually sit down and I say, tell me about yourself. And they're like, what should I say?
Yeah.
So at that point, you've already blown the interview.
Right. It's like that blank stare. For the purposes of prep, I mean, I know some companies can be very pushy with those interview times too. And so you might have short notice, which, you know, again, is okay. But if you can get them to be a couple of days out for that scheduled first interview, that will allow you the time to schedule a mock interview with us and at least have the time to go over it. And it gives you time to do some of our other prep tips. So a big thing for us is knowing who the company or organization is. So researching the company and org before you go into the interview is critical. They're going to be asking you a lot of questions. And if you know enough about who they are as an organization or company, you're going to be able to tailor your responses a bit better based on your own experience, because you know kind of what they're looking for. You at least know what services they offer, what they do overall as an organization.
And even looking at, like, the posting itself, when they have, whether it's the qualifications, preferred qualifications, that can help you prepare for those behavioral-based questions, whether it's teamwork, communication, leadership, those types of things. Glassdoor is a great resource because a lot of times you can see what the interview was like from other actual applicants.
For sure. Studying your own resume, another thing we offer as a tip for students. I think we so often believe that we'll recall this information off the top of our head. Just like you said, you kind of walk in there and you're thinking, oh, I know myself and I'm comfortable talking to people. I shouldn't have any issues. And then as soon as they ask a question that might even be based on what you've written on your own document, you don't remember what you've done. And that probably worse for people that have been working a long time, but also equally important for students, because you might forget in a moment that you had a leadership role on campus in a club, or that you had this work study position that had transferable skills to talk about in that response, and you just kind of blanked or forgot because you didn't review your own document before you went in. So it sounds like a crazy piece of advice, but studying your own resume is a really good prep tip for interviews.
And when you're prepared, it takes away from the nerves and the mm-hmm. stress of it. When you're already going into something and you're nervous, as soon as you hit on a question that you're really not prepared for, it can all fall apart from there. Jumping ahead, I guess, to interview fails is one of the biggest fails is not being specific mm-hmm. because you cannot think of a specific situation in the moment. So, you know, when somebody says, tell me about a time you had to deal with a difficult customer, a lot of times people respond, well, that's every day.
Right. Instead of giving an exact situation right. that happened.
They are looking for how you specifically handled that situation. Just by generalizing it or being vague or saying it happens all the time, you're not answering the question.
No, because they're trying to see how you behaved in the past to predict how you're going to behave in the future. And if they have no context, it's very hard for them to figure out how would this student or person, you know, be in my workplace if I don't have an example of how mm-hmm. they handled something in the past. And that's actually tough because I think, like you said, you're forced to come up with an example or a specific instance in time. And that can be really, really hard to do. One of the pieces of advice that I give is trying to think of these umbrella topics that you might likely get asked about. And that way you have some examples at top of mind versus, again, trying to come up with these specific scenarios without any sort of prep work in advance. So things like leadership or collaboration or like a customer service example, mm-hmm. Things like that, even if you think, oh, this might not even come up, you now have a sample response to, again, a leadership situation that might have occurred or maybe a proud accomplishment or a challenge that you faced. Mm-hmm. All of those things could be, you know, utilized for a variety of different responses depending on how they ask the question.
Absolutely. Or something that you had prepared for teamwork can also apply to problem solving.
Or leadership. Yeah,
exactly. The more prepared you are, the better off the interview is going to go. So let's kind of talk about those responses. So majority of employers are using what's called behavioral-based interviews. And yep. you just kind of defined it in terms of how you handled things in the past predict how you might handle that same situation in the future. Questions like, tell me about a time, give me an example of, describe to me X. Mm-hmm. Those are behavioral-based questions. How do I respond to them?
And they're very hard, right? Because of the specificity that they're requesting. Mm-hmm. So you always want to start off with the situation that you were asked to do or the situation that you were in. So you have the STAR method is what we typically utilize. Yeah. So it's an acronym. It stands for the situation, task, action, result. And that's really how you would formulate your response. So you set up the context with the situation. You talk about what you were asked to do. And the most important pieces to this response are your individual action items in that situation. So what did you do to contribute to that? Because a lot of questions are, if let's say it is a collaboration question or a teamwork question. Yes, you're answering in response to being a part of a team, but what was your individual contribution to that team? So that helps give them an idea of, again, your collaborative skills, but your individual contributions. And then you give them what happened, the result. So tell them if you got an A on the project or if you presented to senior leadership or someone, you know, in that company at a previous experience or internship. It's just a story, basically. I try to say it's like leaving out parts of a story that you're telling a friend.
Right.
Like someone comes to you and they say, oh my gosh, I went to this great party and, you know, this person showed up and then stopping the conversation.
Yes. That's another fail. I call that hitting the wall.
Yeah.
Going back to the result piece, that's really important because mm-hmm. that finishes your response. It means that you've actually answered the question. So that is another fail that pops up. You fail to answer the question. But what a lot of people struggle with is when it's a question that is a little bit negative, like mm-hmm. tell me about an epic fail yeah. or tell me about a time you did not communicate well mm-hmm. and how do I package that result? And you have to make sure that you're talking about your learning experience.
Exactly.
Everybody's human. Everybody has weaknesses, areas of growth that they need to work on. Everybody makes mistakes, but it's how you deal with it.
Right.
So in those situations, that's what your result. You're not always going to increase customer revenue by 450%.
Right, exactly. And I think that's a really good thing to bring up because it also aligns with those questions about what's an area you want to improve about yourself or flat out if they ask you what your weakness mm-hmm. is, which is another very, very difficult question, I think, for anyone to answer.
Yes.
And to ask your point, me. Yeah, what's your weakness?
Time management.
That's it? You're not going to give me more?
That's usually what people say, and it's like no.
Right. So that's a good thing to bring up too, because you don't want your weakness, quote unquote, to be in direct conflict with what the job is expecting you to possess. So if you're saying you're not organized and you just leave it at that, or again, time management mm-hmm. in this example, and just leave it at that, that's not going to be a right. very good sign
I'm
for the employer.
I'm not going to hire somebody no. that can't manage their time right. and are going to be late all the time and so on and so forth. But if I said, well, I used to struggle a lot with time management, especially when I first got on campus. However, with the help of my first year advisor, using Outlook and using my alarm clock, just not just to wake me up, but to help keep me on track, I've definitely improved upon that. But there's always room for growth.
Exactly. And another example I would give, and I have given to other students, I had a student in the past who said, you know, they felt that they were a little shy, right, or introverted. And so one of the things that they did was they became a part of a group called Toastmasters, and it really forced them mm-hmm. to get out of their comfort zone and to speak in front of groups of people. Now, this particular position was not going to have that as a regular occurrence, but it was a part of their background that they just felt very insecure about and wanted to improve on. So whatever the weakness or area to improve that you give, just make sure that you're mentioning something that you're doing about it to improve yourself. But you can always ask us if you're nervous about whatever that weakness question is to make mm-hmm. sure that it isn't one of those, yeah, I'm disorganized and just like right, nothing right. else.
I mean, on the same token, I find that people really struggle with what are your strengths or all yeah. things being equal, why should we hire you over any other candidate? And they kind of feel like, well, I don't want to brag
right,
or I don't want to come across as, you know, egotistical mm-hmm. or anything like that.
Yeah, I get that all the time. I don't want to seem full of myself. Mm-hmm. And there is a fine line between confidence and arrogance. But I think if you, again, review your own resume, you really reflect on your own accomplishments and the experiences mm-hmm. that you had, you're really just sharing back what you've done and how that relates back to the position. It's a skill set that you possess, and that's something that you own, right? So being able to confidently talk about the fact that you are someone who's reliable. You know, your classmates, your work experiences, they know mm-hmm. that you are someone who always shows up and shows up with a positive attitude. Like, that could be a really great strength, and that's not false, right?
So absolutely.
In that case, if it's true to you.
And you can also do that without devaluing the other applicants.
Exactly.
You can say, I'm sure all the other yep. applicants are great, but I feel that I bring X to the table,
right.
so to speak.
Right, for sure. One of the other things that I think we should talk about is dress,
yes.
because this also is a question we get asked a lot is what should I wear to these interviews? And I think that is actually a more complicated question today than it was even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, just
definitely.
Because of COVID, right?
Yep, post-COVID.
Yeah. So it used to be professional suit always, right? And I would still say that that's pretty accurate, but there are some organizations that might tell you, you know, we're a business casual environment. They might mention that in their email. If they don't mention it though, you should err on the side of caution and always dress professionally. So examples would be a suit, which is the standard.
No flip-flops. Ever.
I know. And I would say like no open toe at all. at all. And then think about the colors that you're wearing too. So I know that there are some bolder choices out there now, and I think that's wonderful for maybe a different time. But the standard conservative colors, I think, are still what you want to stick to, because I still get asked about, you know, what color should it be? Black, navy blue, gray. Those are the standard options that I think are going to keep you, you know, feeling confident and not being worried. I would say ties for men, I would still do that unless, again, it's specified that it's more business casual. I would still wear a tie if you are going to an interview, or if it's a skirt suit, you know, make sure that it's past your fingertips to your knee so that it's not too short, because it ultimately leads to discomfort. And I think if you're uncomfortable, that actually can impact the way you perform in the interview as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That impacts on how you feel. And, you know, it's not so much like, oh, I hate suits. It's dress for getting the job.
Yes.
And once you land the position, they will tell you what the dress is
right
there. And I've had people say, well, I know it's like super casual, like they have like games and they wear sneakers. That's great, but you don't work there.
Yeah, you're not employed yet.
Yeah.
and I do think, and I see this more often, that employers are trying to present themselves a little bit more casually because that is the nature of their workplace. So again, if they do say dress as business casual for this experience, or if they do say casual, we don't want you to think you can't listen to them. But if you do have questions about what they've, you know, said in an email to you, please let us know. But otherwise, suit is the way to go.
Yeah.
Oh, we should probably talk about shoes. Not too high heels. And I would avoid sneakers too, because I know we didn't mention that. But we said no flip-flops, but we really, no sneakers. And
no casual shoes. No Crocs. No
Crocs, flip-flops. Yeah.
No Timberlands. No, like, just wear dress shoes.
Yep.
If you're going to wear a heel, like, what do you call it? Like the kitten heel?
Something short. I have watched too many people try to walk in a heel that they're not comfortable walking in, and you're about to break an ankle. So it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Or I realize it looks nice, but some people were not meant for heels, like myself. So I would look like a newborn giraffe
I was
trying
gonna say,
to get
a baby
to the
horse.
Interview room.
Oh, too funny.
So the other thing is body language.
Oh, very good point.
You know, I always say your resume or your networking efforts land you the interview. They're not bringing you in because they are not sure that you meet the qualifications of the job. Now they're trying to figure out, A, like, what exactly are your qualifications? And I call it the likability factor. Are you going to fit in with our culture? Do we like you? So body language, like failing to make eye contact,
right,
failing to smile. It is crazy what a smile can do somebody's face.
I know.
And that kind of can release all the tension in the room right then and there.
I was just going to say that sometimes just because the nerves are so high, just again, giving a smile, mm-hmm. having that affect can change your mood too, because that nerve, it's so stressful.
And it's okay to say I'm nervous.
Yeah.
That sometimes softens the room as well, versus just being so visibly nervous that after you leave, they say, wow, they were really nervous.
Right.
I think the other thing too is, and this is where a mock interview comes in, is knowing what your tics might be.
I was just going to say tapping, hair twirling.
Yes. So I know I talk with my hands.
Me too.
And whenever I'm in an interview or if I'm even presenting, I try really hard to like hold my hands or keep them in my pocket or something like that, because otherwise they're just flying all over the place.
Yep. And like you said, if you're not aware of what that is, a mock interview, we can really tease that out. Like mm-hmm. we can watch it if it becomes distracting. And I would say another one would be the ums and likes.
Yes.
You knows.
Whatnots.
Whatnots. We you all know. Do this. We all do this. We've probably done it 100 times this past 10 minutes, but I think sometimes slowing ourselves down can really help with that. I know over the course of the last 10 plus years I've been working in career services, that's probably the easiest thing you can do is just slow yourself down.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the fillers come out, because we're trying to replace that space with something. And that's why we use like so and fill that in.
And that becomes part of the preparation, because you're using those fillers. But also, when you're thinking of what to say, people automatically look up. I don't know why, but that's where
we just did it.
You lose eye contact. The fillers come in, see, and I lost eye contact.
Right. But again, we're humans. That's what we do. But when you're in an interview, you just don't want it to be so distracting. I remember at one point I did a mock interview with someone and I was just tallying how many times they said like. And I said, I lost track because it was so much. And I said, it's important that you know that, because if you do slow down, you will alleviate that. I would hate for someone to go into an interview and them not even pay attention to them because those fillers were just so distracting.
Mm-hmm. And looking at like how you start an interview. So tell me about yourself. A lot of people rush through that.
Yeah.
And if you actually just time yourself, you'll see 30 to 45 seconds.
Right. It's not that long.
It's not that long, but you can get a lot out in that time too.
Right. And you have to think, because tell me about yourself, what I would probably venture to say is one of the harder questions that people, at least they ask us, mm-hmm. how do I even answer that? Because it is the start of the interview. And you really want to think about paring down to why you're sitting across the table from that person in that moment. Mm-hmm. So it's not the time to be talking about, you know, your siblings and your dogs and your cats and your personal interests, because this is the moment to say, if it's your class year, mm-hmm. it's your major, you've been focused on these specific areas that, again, relate to the role or mm-hmm. position you're going for. And that provides the overview of, oh, great, like, now we can get into the conversation because I know a little bit more about you in relation and context to the position.
And wrap it up, too. So don't just, like, hit a wall, you know, like, and I do this.
Period.
wrap it up with why you're really interested in the company or the position. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's for an interview. That's the best thing to do.
For sure.
Looking at like arriving, like just some of those like housekeeping things, you want to be early, but you don't want to be too early.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have stories about this. So I used to live in New York City, and when I was interviewing for a position, I remember being so nervous, but then I was lost and I did not have time to get there with enough comfort to not be so stressed out when I got there. And so one of the things I learned very quickly is that I need to know exactly where I need to be. And even if I'm in a coffee shop a block away, mm-hmm. knowing that I know exactly where I need to be within like 30 minutes, I'm good. Like I know exactly where I need to go. But I would not arrive more than 10 minutes early
no.
to a lobby of a building to go up to wherever you need to be or to enter into the office. It's just too early, especially if your interview's first thing and people haven't even arrived to work yet.
Right, or they haven't gotten their coffee no. or they're, you know, 10 minutes or less.
Yep.
And then when you're waiting, like depending on where it is, like remember the interview starts the moment you walk into that building.
Absolutely.
Because you never know who you're riding in an elevator with. You're meeting in the stairwell. But, you know, whoever's greeting you at the front desk is 1,000% giving feedback.
I used to ask when I was a recruiter, I would ask our front desk, I would say, how were they to you?
Absolutely.
And they'd say rude. And I'd be like, okay, thank yeah. you.
I remember we had somebody who interviewed that was great, and then the front desk, you know, said that they were so rude to them. No, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Don't chew gum. You know, make sure you get rid of it. Don't be on your phone. I know
yes,
it's like a phone culture,
it. Yes. But. Yeah, so it shouldn't be on the desk in front of whoever's interviewing you. It should be stowed away in a bag on silent just so that you don't have any distractions during that interview time. I tell this to students I meet with, and I know it sounds super weird, but it does work. And I've had a lot of people tell me it works. I've done it. I think it does work. So I think often in absence of a mock interview, or maybe you have done a mock interview and you're still trying to polish up those last minute quirks or things that you're doing that you want to stop doing, I actually advise students to just talk out the responses. I don't care if you're folding laundry or you're doing something that's a little bit more mindless, making dinner. Ask yourself the question, oh, you know, hi, tell me about yourself. And actually respond to the question out loud. Because we can write down our sample responses all day long. We can talk about it in our head. But until you hear yourself responding to that, you're not able to polish the responses, I think, in the way that you would imagine you could. And I found that the more I've done that, again, not getting to the rehearsal setting, but mm-hmm. so I'm not, you know, rehearsing for a play, but I do think that it helps get out those little, you know, maybe, oh, I didn't mean to say that, or, oh, I don't like the way that sounded. And you'd be amazed that when you actually get to the interview, you respond in a way that is so much more clear than it would have been if you just hadn't, you know, talked it out. And again, this could be an absence of a mock if it is one of those situations where you have a last minute interview that you got to prepare for, or if you have done one and you just want to practice right beforehand.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And it also becomes like muscle memory.
Yeah.
So when you're in the interview, you're like, oh yeah, I remember walking through this. Also with your elevator pitch, mm-hmm. it just comes across as more authentic.
Yeah, for sure. And similarly, a prep item that I do think is helpful is even if it's a phone interview or a Zoom interview, fully dress, like fully get into your mm-hmm. suit, get in the zone. Because again, I know it sounds crazy to put on a full suit for a phone interview, But again, it automatically puts you in a professional mood. It's like you immediately feel your posture is better. it really does elevate your ability to communicate better in the interview, at least I've found. And I know that I've had feedback that it works. So we want to try to do everything we can to put ourselves at least one foot forward.
I had asked a friend of mine who's an HR manager, like, what are the three positives somebody can do and then the three negatives? And they actually said, so have a good attitude, make sure you answer the question, and it's okay to say, I'm not sure, I don't know, or can we come back to that? And most importantly, ask questions at the end.
Yes. Oh, we got to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And then the negatives were being late for the interview, doesn't ask about the company or expectations or not having any questions, answers questions with a yes or no, or knows nothing about the company.
So these are perfect tips because, mm-hmm. again, the one piece I really liked is if you do get asked a question that you don't know the answer to, I love that saying, you know what, I would like a little bit more time on that if we can come back to it.
Right.
Because then you're not fumbling through an answer that really isn't the best example of that experience. And then you're kicking yourself. You're like, oh man, I should have come up with a different
answer. Yeah. I call that talking yourself out of a job because you just keep talking, hoping the answer is eventually going to come to you.
Like Michael Scott. Great office quote, if you can go back to it.
Yes.
And I also like, you know, again, the questions piece just shows interest. So at the end of the interview, they'll always ask you, do you have questions for us? If you sit there and say, nope, I'm all set, not good.
Mm-mm.
You have to come with questions. Even if this is your second or third interview, you got to have questions every single round. So having, you know, questions such as, what is the timeline for hiring for this position? Mm-hmm. Like, that's good for you to know. And it's a fairly easy question to ask. You could ask about, you know, what do you see as an ideal candidate in this position?
Mm-hmm.
You
could ask the first 30, 60, or 90 days look like in this position.
Yeah, you could also ask about training and mentorship. Mm-hmm. Again, things that are important to you that you would like to know, minus how much do I get paid and when can I take time off?
Right. And that's a really great point, Jamie, because the stress is like, oh, I have to come in here. I have to wow them. I have to be offered this position. This is really, you're interviewing them.
Yep.
It is a conversation. So you might get in there and realize, like, this is not the job or the company for me. And you don't find that out if you're not asking the right questions.
Right. That is such a good point.
So that's really important to look at. What is this position going to do for you in terms of your own experience, knowledge, skills, abilities, even network? Is the culture aligned with what my values are?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it really is a conversation. And in order to have that conversation, you have to have questions. And you don't want to have 10, 20 30 questions.
No. Three to five.
Yeah, that's actually my number too.
Yeah.
I usually recommend 3 to 5. Definitely the one about the next steps if they don't address it.
Yep. Perfect.
Okay, so interview fails. What have we talked about? Talking yourself out of a job, hitting the wall, fail to answer the question, not having any questions, and thinking you got this because you're a nice person.
Right.
What I always say is interviews require practice and polish, and really use career services to get rid of those jitters. My goal with a mock interview is that you come back and tell me that I was so much harder on you than the interview.
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh my God, that prepared me so much.
Right. Or, oh, it was so much easier. They only asked me one question.
Right. Which sometimes does happen, oddly enough. All right.
Yeah, so great point too. All interviews are different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could prepare to the hilt and then you go in and they're like, so tell me about you. And then that's legitimately the only question you get asked, and it's a conversation the whole time. And I think that's a pleasant surprise. Not every interview is going to feel like an interrogation. Some of them really are going to be more conversational, and it sort of depends on the company. I'd say the bigger that they are, the probably the more formal the process. But I have had students who have gone into like smaller businesses and had just a conversation with someone, and it feels very relaxed and easy. And again, that's our hope for you, but we have to prepare for the hard ones.
So now that I've completed my interview, what do I do next?
Well, I personally believe, no, it's everybody. You should send a thank you email for sure. I know that there are sort of different schools of thought on the handwritten note. And I think, unfortunately, because of how fast our world mm-hmm. operates and how fast decisions are made, if a thank you email is not sent within 24 hours, they take notice. And yeah. I think it's so, so important that you give a thank you email, definitely to the person who ran your interview. If it's the recruiter, that's fine. But possibly if you're spending more time with like the hiring manager of that position, they should certainly get an email. And you want to reference something specific that you spoke about in that interview. Having it super general, again, doesn't touch on a personal point with yeah. the interviewer.
And sending the same email to everybody. They talk.
Yeah, they do. So if you have an interview that require or that has multiple people as a part of your interview day, try to send something a little different to each person. Mm-hmm. It might not be totally different, but touch upon different things. And if you have trouble finding emails, because that's usually another hard one, like, oh, I met with six people at this mm-hmm. interview and I only have emails for two. You can always ask the person that coordinated your interview for the email addresses to send that thank you, or you can ask them to forward it on for you.
Right.
All right. So I think we covered a lot today for interviewing.
Yeah, I agree.
So again, if you do have further questions, we encourage you to schedule an appointment on Handshake with one of us to do a mock interview. They are very, very helpful. And again, we won't scare you. This wraps up today's podcast. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and connect with us on LinkedIn. We want to hear from you, ideas for future topics, questions, feedback. Just email us at ccap@sjf.edu.
Thanks for listening. We are the career coaches of Fisher, here for your career.